You're listening to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the DFS Karma Podcast Network. Now here's your host with the most, Jack Caparuccio.
Welcome back to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the Karma Media Network. I'm your host, Jack Caparuccio, a.k.a. Clinic Cap on Twitter. This is episode number 11 of the No Cap Podcast. Today we're diving into the most important NFL news and notes for fantasy football purposes, and we're going to get a preview of my Start Sit column that goes live in a couple days, but I figured I'd give you all a sneak peek so that you can hopefully make some decisions early on. If you want to see the full Start Sit and weekly rankings, head over to dfskarma.com to read up. If you want my insights on Thursday Night Football player props, that article is already live for free at betkarma.com. If you need Dynasty help, feel free to join our Discord at dfskarma.com and you'll get direct access to me and the rest of the experts with our Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass Plus. Head over to dfskarma.com to check that out in more detail. Let's get right into it. So the first news and notes I have is there's a ton of injuries this past week. We all know that it was an absolute bloodbath out there. It seems like there's more and more injuries piling up every single week. And I'm not sure why this is, but it feels like this season has had more injuries than ever before. It's a little bit depressing, to be honest. But the biggest notes and takeaways is Juju Smith-Schuster landed on season-ending IR after shoulder surgery. Now, he wasn't having the greatest season ever by any means, but he's still got a feel for the guy. You also have to look at what's going to happen fantasy-wise. We all know that Big Ben is washed. He's a noodle arm now. I don't think that's really a hot take. He did have a few good passes this last week, but in general, he's not what he once was, and we all know that. So in coordination with this move, the Steelers signed Anthony Miller off the street, who just got cut by the Texans. So I'm not really looking to add Anthony Miller. I think if he can't make it on the Houston Texans, whose wide receiver one is Cooks, and then no one else since Nico Collins hasn't been healthy, if he can't make it there, I'm not sure why we think he's going to be successful on the Steelers, who have much better options than Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool ahead of him. So the Anthony Miller thing just feels like a depth signing to me. I'm not looking at him for fantasy purposes at this point. He could flash and show some target share, and then I'd be looking at him. But for right now, I don't think you need to look too much into this. Reports out of Dolphins camp are that Tua is coming off of IR. At least he's gotten the designation to come off of IR. So this is good news for Dolphins fans. I'm not sure this is necessarily good news for tight end Mike Gesicki, who has had some great weeks as of late. We saw that as soon as Tua got hurt, Gesicki became Jacoby Brissett's favorite target by a lot. He started having much better and more consistent performances than he did with Tua. So be wary about this. I would monitor Gesicki and see how he does with Tua back in the lineup, but there is a good chance that he doesn't do as well as he did with Brissett, as weird as that may sound. I'm still happy that Tua is back. It's good for the team. It's good for him. It's good for football. So I'm glad he's coming off of IR and his injury wasn't too serious. Now let's hope the Dolphins O-line has gotten a little bit better to protect that man. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is on short-term IR for an MCL sprain. This one's got to frustrate people. Clyde Edwards-Helaire at this point in his career for both Dynasty and Redraft players has been frustrating. He's been frustrating to roster. Last year, he was touted as you know, some would say, first-round pick as a rookie, and look how that turned out. And now he's on IR, and he wasn't having that great of a season to begin with. If you look at the snap shares, he was being almost forced into this committee with Darrell Williams. So I'm not sure if the team even trusts him to live up to the pedigree that they drafted him at. And I'm not sure we should trust him for fantasy to live up to that pedigree. He's been waning. He got a couple good touchdowns, which boosted his weekly point totals. But beyond that, it's not encouraging. So if you've got him, obviously, and you have an IR spot, you stash him. But I don't know how to feel about Clyde the rest of the season going forward, to be completely honest. Even when he does come back, I'm not so certain that he's going to even be an RB2 at this point. And that feels shocking to say. But it's also because the offense doesn't look like it has normally. This Chiefs offense is struggling mightily, and it's not just Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's the entire team. We've seen that there are things going on in Kansas City with that offense that we haven't seen before. There's struggles. And we all preface this value of Clyde off of the fact that, oh, this is the best offense in football. Well, I'm not sure that's true, or at least not true right now. It could be true. They're going to obviously get back on track. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Travis Kelce. It's Tyreek Hill. It's Andy Reid. Like, They obviously have the pieces there to do it, but as of right now, they look out of sync. So even when Clyde comes back, I am not super hot on him. So if you've got him, fine. But he's not somebody, because I get these questions all the time. Oh, should I trade for this guy that just got injured and stash him? It's like, no, don't. Because Clyde could very well, A, re-aggravate this injury, and B, not be as fancy useful as you think he is. Next note is Dallas Goedert has landed on the COVID-19 list, on the reserve list. So he's out at least this week. He had some illness he dealt with. They didn't confirm that it was COVID, at least that I saw in practice. But this actually makes a nice spot for Zach Ertz as a streamer this week. Ertz has passed double-digit points 2 out of 5 weeks this year, and that was with Goedert in the lineup. So if you're in a full PPR league, I think Ertz is a fine stream play this week. Next, it's unfortunate, Trey Lance with a knee sprain. And it stinks because Lance hasn't looked polished as a passer. We all knew that about him coming in, that he wasn't going to be this polished passer, at least right away. But they gave the man 16 carries. I think it was 16 carries for 80 yards or something like that. So, and he outperformed their running back, Eli Mitchell, by 9 extra carries. So the RB1 for the 49ers this past week was their quarterback, Trey Lance. And now he has a knee sprain. Shanahan is one of the most suspect coaches out there, in my opinion. He always gets glossed over as this boy genius type of coordinator. And, oh my gosh, the offense he can put together, no one else in the league can do it. But what has he done lately? He's gotten his quarterback hurt because they're overusing him. If you don't think, you know, Lance should be carrying the ball that much, obviously that's a skill set, and that's what makes him useful for fantasy, is that rushing upside. But you shouldn't force him to be the RB1 in terms of carries and yardage. It's not like Eli Mitchell's a bad player, and now that he's healthy, you should use him. So I'm hoping that this doesn't linger. I hope this doesn't get worse. They're not overly concerned about it, but as a manager of Lance and Dynasty Redraft, you do have to be concerned, because, you know, this is one of his first full starts, and he already sprains his knee because he's carrying the ball 16 times. This is like reminiscent of Cam Newton when he was younger. And Cam Newton was an Iron Man for a long time, but once injuries started piling up, they didn't stop. I'm not implying that with Lance. I'm just saying you don't like to see the rushing rookie quarterback get hurt in one of his first starts. It stinks. Saquon Barkley is missing the next 2 to 4 weeks with an ankle injury. And to be honest, if you watch that game, you are lucky that it's 2 to 4 weeks. When I watched Barkley get hurt this past weekend, I thought it was done. I thought it was going to be a season ender, because the way he reacted, the way that ankle turned, the way they took him out on the Grim Reaper cart, I was like, this guy can't catch a break. And obviously he still can't catch a break because he's hurt again. But at least if you're a Barkley manager, you have hopes that, you know, he's going to be back this season. The only thing about it is I'm starting to think, I'm not sure we're ever going to see the version of Saquon Barkley we ever did again when he was a rookie. He just keeps getting hurt, and it seems like they keep rushing him back from these injuries. I don't think he was fully healed from this ACL tear to begin with, because of how he started camp off and how he started the games off and all these workload limits and all of that. And now that they've taken the workload limit off of him, then he has another injury. Obviously, this is different, but still lower body injury. And quite honestly, the 2 to 4 week timeline sounds aggressive for a player that has already been hurt in a significant way. Wouldn't you want to give him the most time possible? I understand the Giants are trying to remain competitive and all of that, but at this point, it feels like Barkley just keeps rushing back from these things. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago, he rushed back from the high ankle sprain. It was a 6 week timeline. He came back in like 2 weeks, and I think he reaggravated it. So if you keep doing this with a player, they're not going to return to the form they once were. Obviously, Saquon Barkley is a freak athlete and talent, but that only goes so far. You can't keep getting hurt and rushing back and getting hurt and rushing back and expect things to be exactly the same unless you have a ton of time to recover, a ton of time to train and make these muscles stronger. So I'm concerned about Barkley the rest of the season, because I think even when he gets back, there's a good chance he re-injures it or re-injures something else. It's one of those things where it's becoming really hard to trust him at this point. And beyond that, other Giants injuries to go through. Daniel Jones got one of the worst concussions I've seen in a long time. That guy stumbled off the field and they had to help him out of there. So I hope he's okay. I hope he can play this week if he's ready to go and if he's healed. We also have Kenny Golladay with a knee injury. So Golladay, another guy who's frustrating you because he just has all these nagging, lingering injuries the whole season and all of last season. And then you have Kadarius Toney getting x-rays, and it's not for the hand that he used to clock a Cowboys player with. It is for his ankle foot region, and they say that he should be fine. They're not sure if he's going to play this week, but they don't think it's a long-term issue. And if you're a Kadarius Toney manager, or if you're looking at him on waivers, you're hoping that's not the case, because the guy went off. As soon as Galladay was out and we have all these other Giants injured, Kadarius Toney did really well. And he was showing early on why they used a first-round pick to get him, and he's justifying it. So you can hate on Toney all you want. You can say your analytics this and breakout model that didn't tell you he was going to be good. But if a player is getting touches in offense and is doing things with those touches, you have to acknowledge that. And you have to be able to pivot and say, all right, yeah, he's going to be useful for fantasy. So I have Kadarius Toney stashed on all kinds of taxi squads because he had this third round, fourth round rookie price tag on him from being discounted because people just thought he wasn't good. I didn't love him. I don't love him now. I'm not saying that I called Kadarius Toney or anything. I'm just saying that when a team invests high capital on him, even if you don't like a player, you at least need to take a closer look and see, all right, well, at this point, if I burn a third round pick on him, what do I care? They're scratch off lottery tickets anyway, so I might as well stash them. So hopefully you stash Toney in Dynasty. You still have a point or a chance to stash him in redraft, and I would encourage you to do so. Last piece of injury news is Russell Wilson is trying to return by week 10. Now, if you've been living under a rock this whole time, you will not have known that he darn near ripped his finger off in the game, and he had to get surgery to get that done. At first, they were saying there was no timeline, but now they're saying week 10, which, you know, about 4 weeks out. I still think that's a little aggressive from what they said the injury was. I wouldn't want to see Wilson re-aggravate that, especially on a throwing hand. And I think what's going to come down to is if the Seahawks are truly in playoff contention. If they lose a bunch of games in a row with Geno Smith and they're way out of the playoff race, I don't think he's going to rush this back. I think they'll take a long-term look at it and make sure that their franchise QB is right going into next year. So something to monitor, something to watch. If you have an IR spot, stash him. If you need another guy, drop him and then pick him back up. Save some waiver points for it. Some waiver ads I'm looking at this week. Obvious names on this list for a couple. Darrell Williams, now that CEH is out, he was the guy who got the most of work as soon as he went down. So he's obviously the pivot option here. I think he could be a solid RB2 in this offense. He kind of reminds me of Damian Williams when David Montgomery went down, he was the waiver claim last week. I don't think he's got as high of upside because I project him to split the backfield evenly with Jerick McKinnon, who could be a nice little contrarian or sneaky pickup if you're not looking to blow whatever fab you have left on Darrell Williams. McKinnon, you know, you can say he's washed and whatnot, but he's still going to have a role in the offense, which is more than you can say about most running backs this time of year, especially with all the injuries out there. Like I mentioned, Kadarius Toney, if he's still out there on your waiver wire, go ahead and add him. He's going to be a priority piece in this offense. You can go stash Devonta Booker, which I would encourage because he's likely to get the majority of the snap share in that offense. Not that that's pretty by any means. Not that you know, the Giants' 80% snap share in the offense is something to, you know, get excited about, because the offense doesn't look great. The offensive line is a mess. But like I said, at this point, there's not a whole lot out there. So go ahead and add him. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown. We've seen this last week, he had over a 25% target share. He's emerging as a target share leader on the Lions offense. TJ Hockenson has been disappointing the last couple weeks. He's been inconsistent. Quintez Cephas just went on IR and season-ending IR. So the opportunity is there for the rookie. He's got talent. He's going to get usage in this offense. And in a full PPR league, he could be flex-worthy. So this week, we don't have the super mailbag. We just have the regular mailbag because there weren't a lot of questions. So we're just going to go and devote a little more attention to the ones that did submit this week. This first question comes from @Breakham23. They asked, Dynasty League, Mike Williams, Cortland Sutton, and a 2023 late first round pick for CeeDee Lamb and early 2022 second? I'm rebuilding. Thinking I keep Lamb since I'm 2 to 3 years from contending. So I like this move, and I'm assuming the person acquiring Mike Williams Sutton in 23 first is probably a contender since Mike Williams is playing absolutely lights out this year, and Sutton to a degree. And Lamb has been disappointing because the Cowboys don't have the kind of passing volume we all projected them for. So I like it a lot. If you truly are rebuilding and you're looking down the road, then yeah, Lamb is, I think, an elite acquisition. I think he's an elite asset, and I still do think he's a top five dynasty wide receiver. I don't think that's, at least for me, it's not a hot take. For some of you out there, it might be, but he's got the talent. Amari Cooper will be gone sooner rather than later in Dallas and has always remained hurt, even though he still gets the job done. So at a certain point in these next 2-3 years, I think Lamb will take over as the guy in Dallas. So I like that move for you. This next question comes from @JLALOGM77. They asked, Darrell Williams or Devontae Booker? is A.J. Brown still a buy low? So, as I touched on, Darrell Williams probably split the backfield with Jerick McKinnon, or if they bring in someone else. So, I lean Booker, but it's not like it's, you know, I'm not like I'm pounding the table for Devontae Booker. The point is here is you're chasing what's likely to be more volume. And Devontae Booker did run a lot of routes when he was on the field, so he could have some pass catching upside for you. So I think everyone's going to be more fixated on Darrell Williams since the Chief offense has that luster to it, even though it's not really there right now. So Devontae Booker probably is going to end up a little bit cheaper for you, and I think he'll have higher upside on a weekly basis. In the case of A.J. Brown, it's tough because he's been hurt, one. The Titans offense, at least the passing offense, has been bad, too. And it's hard to gauge whether that's going to get better or not. I'd like to believe it gets better. Tannehill's a good quarterback. A.J. Brown's, I think, an elite talent wide receiver. But if you can't stay healthy, and Derrick Henry is getting it done for you, and now he catches passes, I have a hard time with it. I think the only way you can buy A.J. Brown is if you truly trust the talent, and if you have other guys in place that can carry you in the meantime. I think A.J. Brown will still have his boom weeks, and I think he's still an elite talent and elite player to have, but I'm not sure he's going to do that at a consistent level this season. And it's still tough to say because Julio Jones hasn't been in the lineup consistently, so who knows? A.J. Brown and Julio Jones get healthy at the same time, hopefully, and who knows who's going to end up being the one there at this point because they've both dealt with injuries and the whole offense has struggled. So I would buy low if, as long as you're managing your expectations. I'm not buying A.J. Brown and expecting top five redraft finish like I did earlier this offseason. I was wrong on that because the volume isn't there. He's been injured, and the offense has regressed as a whole to a point where I didn't think it would go to. So I was wrong on A.J. Brown on my take earlier in the offseason, but I still think there's opportunity here because he's had a slow start, and he's the type of guy who I just put him in my lineup because he can always drop 30 points on you. You know, he's inconsistent, but the upside is too high to deny. So I would buy on A.J. Brown, but manage your expectations and make sure you have consistent wide receivers in place to make that move and not have it sink your team. Next question comes from at @AJTADEPALLI3. They asked, Hunter Henry or Ricky Seals-Jones? So never in my lifetime would I see this question about Ricky Seals-Jones. I didn't even know that guy was in the league until about 3 weeks ago. I thought he had retired or just vanished into the abyss of fantasy football. That being said, I'm going to lean Hunter Henry here. I know that Ricky Seals-Jones is really the only option right now at tight end for that team, but Henry has emerged as a go-to target. I detail this a little bit more in my Start Sit column this week when I talk about sitting Jonnu Smith, but Henry has looked like Mac Jones' favorite, at least in the tight end room. He's getting more targets. He's doing things with those targets, whereas Jonnu Smith, the targets he's been getting, he's not really doing much with it. And I think his target share has decreased because of that. Even though they both got thrown Brinks trucks of cash at them, Hunter Henry's the one making the most of this opportunity. So I would go Hunter Henry, especially in a full PPR league. I think that the Patriots are still going to have to lean more pass heavy because they're going to trail in games. So Hunter Henry is as good as any as you can get at tight end because the position is just so darn thin. This last question comes from @AlcoEGWU. They asked, is Allen Robinson playable? The quick answer is no. And I said it last week where I can't start Robinson until he proves it. We're getting to the point now with Robinson where you're just going to have to cut your losses at a sunk cost. And it's not because he's a bad player, right? No, I don't think anybody's really saying that. No one's saying, oh, Robinson just fell off a cliff because he's not good anymore. You got to look at his targets. He's not getting targeted. And the offense isn't throwing. Justin Fields threw like 19 passes last week. And even before that, the passing volume was not that high. So I think it's more of a case of the offense just doesn't allow for even one wide receiver to be consistently fantasy relevant on a week in, week out basis. Darnell Mooney had the splash week 2 weeks ago against the Lions, and Allen Robinson had like 8-9 points, hit some garbage time in there, and we all thought, oh, okay, well, Mooney's the one. Then this week, Mooney had like 6 points, and Allen Robinson had like 6 or 7 points. So we thought, well, no, who's the one? Nobody's the one, right? Until they start passing more, until Matt Nagy starts letting Fields air the ball out more, or give Fields actual rushing touches because he's only ran the ball 3 times in both games he started, then the whole offense is just anemic. it's hard to touch any of it outside of like Damian Williams, maybe Khalil Herbert. I can't touch it because it's not predictable. The volume's not there. The touchdown efficiency isn't there on a low volume. So there's not much you can really do about it. I know it stinks because you spent a pretty penny to get Allen Robinson in your drafts, but he's not startable. He's not startable at this point. And with how the offense is trending, he is like hurtling toward a bust, a big time draft bust this year, which if anyone told you, oh, Allen Robinson's going to bust this year, I'd love to see the take, because I did not see one person talk about the possibility of Allen Robinson busting, because we can't predict everything. No one has a crystal ball, and no one's advice should be taken as gospel. And I can promise you this, if any of us out there could tell you with 100% degree of certainty what's going to happen every week in football, if I knew in the top of my head, these guys are all going to be top 10 this week, and I know that for sure, and I can see into the future, I can promise you people wouldn't be giving you fantasy advice for free on Twitter or on podcasts. What they would be doing is they'd be taking their entire life savings and betting it every single week because they know it's going to happen. And they'd be doubling their net worth every week, and they would be telling no one about it. So long story short, do not play Allen Robinson. If he starts getting into the double-digit targets again and starts coming through with it, then yes. But at this point, there's nothing indicating that that's going to happen. So a little new segment here. I wanted to give all of my listeners an early preview of my starts and sits of the week because obviously this time of year, everyone's asking start-sit questions. That's the majority of what people want to know. So I figured, you know what? You all take the value of time out of your day to listen to this podcast, so I might as well give you an early preview of some of these guys. So I'll go through one start, one sit of the week at each position, and then you can find the rest of them online at dfskarma.com, which is a free article to read. So brush up on it, use it to set your lineups, ask me questions, do whatever you want with it. But it's a resource there for you and to hopefully help you with your lineups this week. So my number one QB start of the week is Taylor Heinicke versus the Kansas City Chiefs. In 4 point per passing touchdown scoring, Heinicke stands as the QB 16 overall. So he's dead middle out of 32 teams, right? He's been inconsistent in the scoring, but I think we're in for another Heinicke spike week against the poorest Chiefs defense. Through 5 games, the Chiefs are allowing the most fantasy points in the league to the quarterback position. The Washington football team defense hasn't lived up to its billing, so I'm expecting this to be a high-scoring shootout between the two teams this weekend. Beyond a good passing day, Heinicke also offers you anywhere from 20 to 40 rushing yards per game on a weekly basis, which helps raise his floor to the level where I'm comfortable starting him as a fantasy QB1 this week, which means top 10 or top 12, depending on what league format you play in. Heinicke's only rostered in 8.5% of leagues and only being started in 3.7. So he is the definition of a streaming option to hold you over with some of these teams on a bye week. I think we saw this last week that the Chiefs defense is not what anyone thought it was. It's not what it used to be. It stinks. And the Washington football team defense stinks. So in order to stay in this game, there's either going to have to be really high passing volume, or Washington football team's going to have to control the clock through the run game, which I don't see being as likely. So I think Heinicke's in for a smash week. He's a great streamer for you. And I think even if he quote-unquote busts this week, that bust floor is really low, meaning that I don't think he can have that low of points where it's going to sink you a week. My number one quarterback sit of the week, we're going back to the Chicago Bears, who we just talked about for a long time, and it's Justin Fields against the Green Bay Packers. No one's disputing Justin Fields' talent and the fact that every fantasy football analyst out there wants Fields to blow up. Everyone wants it. They're all saying, yeah, Fields could do this. Fields could have this rushing upside. Fields could do this. He has a deep shot, right? He's a good deep ball thrower. He could blow up with Mooney. But I can't start Fields with confidence until he shows it, or until Matt Nagy's gone. Vamoose, bye-bye. Until he's gone, I don't know if I can do it, because through 2 games as a starter, Fields is only averaging 10 points a week. The Bears are throwing the ball 20 times a game with Fields as a starter. Fields is only rushing the ball 3 times a game. The fantasy points are not there yet. The only way they're going to come on this low of passing volume is they open up and say, all right, run it 10, 15 times a game like we did with Trey Lance. Trey Lance didn't have a great week last week, but he ran the football a bunch, so it was like a 16-point week, even though it was not a stellar performance for him. To become fantasy relevant on a weekly basis, Nagy has to open up this offense. They have to have a faster pace of play. They have to run more plays. And I don't see that happening, since Nagy is just insistent on holding his rookie QB back. So I have to fade Fields until further notice. I don't like to do it because he's on paper, he's a Konami code quarterback, right? He can run the ball really well. He doesn't have to necessarily have a stellar passing game to be really good for fantasy. Look at Jalen Hurts this last week and his two rushing touchdowns, and he still scored 26 points after having an abysmal passing day. That's a Konami code. And that's what Justin Fields is in terms of his skill set. But if he's not being allowed to use his skill set, then he's not hitting his skill set, and he's not hitting the potential that we all know he has. So he's a sit for me, even against the Packers. My number one running back start of the week is DeAndre Swift versus the Bengals. And Swift, to all of you really informed people out there, sounds like a must start every week. And he is to me. But I get so many questions in the week that specifically reference, do I start DeAndre Swift or insert player name here, right? Different player. And 9 times out of 10, my answer is going to be Swift. In full PPR formats, Swift sits as the RB7 overall for fantasy football and averages 18 points a week. Now, the Lions did just lose Pro Bowl center Frank Ragnow for the year, but as a pass-catching back, Swift is less likely to see a significant decrease in fantasy output. The Bengals allow an average of 25 fantasy points to running backs each week, and this figures to be another negative game script for the Lions in a tough matchup against a really good Bengals offense. So I'm expecting Swift to be utilized early and often in the passing game like he has. He had a good rushing touchdown last week, but with Ragnow out, I think this more negatively affects Jamal Williams, who's that more traditional type of running back, you know, in between the tackles runner, or 1A as they would call it, and everyone liked to run away with that narrative point this offseason that Jamal Williams was 1A, so Swift wasn't going to be good because he was 1B, even though 1B just meant an Austin Eckler role, which we have seen come to fruition every week. So he's a must start for me. This is the last time I'll mention him in the start sit article, but it's because people always ask me, should I start Swift? He's questionable in practice. He had a groin injury. Yeah, it's the same groin injury he's had the last 7 weeks. He's going to play, right? Unless they say it got worse, he's going to play and he's fine. Or I don't know if I should start Swift. You have Jamal Williams there. Has that mattered to this point? They've both been good. Jamal Williams has been streakier because he's, again, more that traditional rusher, but Swift has been a smash top 10 play. You don't sit DeAndre Swift. Lock him in and don't ask about it ever again because he's a good running back. My running back sit of the week is Alex Collins versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, there's a little bit of caveat to this, but even if Chris Carson remains out of the Seahawks lineup this week against Steelers, I'm doing everything in my power to leave Collins on the bench. In expanded role last week against the LA Rams, Collins only had 9.2 PPR points on 15 rushes and 2 catches. And that was against, you know, the Rams defense is good, but it was still an easier matchup than this week because the Steelers defense allows the 4th fewest fantasy points to running backs. So Collins is a fade for me this week, regardless of Chris Carson's status, because I know a bunch of people went and grabbed Collins off the waiver wire and started him last week and got, you know, decent points out of him. So they're like, oh, well, can I start him this week? Yeah, it would be great too, but I really don't think this is the spot for it unless you're just truly desperate and you've just been decimated by injuries. Then I can understand that. You know, obviously we all get put in binds with our rosters, so I get it, but if you can, I would advise against it. My wide receiver start of the week is Chase Claypool versus Seattle Seahawks. And I know, Big Ben's washed. We already touched on it at the beginning of the show. New alarm. We all know. We get it. I'm not shocking anyone when I'm saying that Roethlisberger isn't what he once was. But with Juju Smith-Schuster landing on season-ending IR with the recent injury and surgery on his shoulder, Claypool is in a prime breakout spot against the Seahawks secondary. We've all watched Jamal Adams try to cover people at safety. Doesn't work. Not going to happen. But not only do the Seahawks allow the 5th most fantasy points wide receivers, but Claypool is coming off a nice 5-catch, 130-yard, and 1-touchdown performance against the Broncos, who have a much better secondary. Claypool's target share and opportunity should increase this week with the loss of Smith-Schuster. And for me, Claypool is projecting as a high-end wide receiver 2 play in all formats. I think he's got week-winning upside because he just is going to be necessary for them to stay in games. So start Claypool with confidence going forward. My sit of the week at wide receiver is Cole Beasley versus the Titans. Now, Beasley started the year on a tear with high target share and high volume. But that volume has just vanished in recent weeks, with Beasley only seeing 4 targets in the last 2 games combined. Dawson Knox has emerged in the offense, who we talked about on the must-start column last week in this article. And with the involvement of Emmanuel Sanders, Beasley is just a full fade for me. Even in a plus matchup and against a horrific Titans defense, I can't start Beasley with confidence, so leave him on your bench. My tight end start of the week is Zach Ertz. Yeah, remember him? He's alive. He's not dead. They didn't trade him away like they reported 16 times in the offseason. With Dallas Goedert landing on the COVID-19 reserve list, this is the time to stream Ertz in a tight end depleted league if you're ever going to do it. In full PPR formats with Goedert in the lineup, Ertz posted 15.3 and 12.0 points this year in separate matchups. Ertz should see anywhere from 6 to 8 targets this week in a matchup with the Buccaneers and Thursday Night Football, who allow the 5th most fantasy points to tight ends. And another note, Lavonte David is not expected to play in this game because I believe he rolled his ankle or something, so he's supposed to miss this week. So the linebacking core is more depleted than it normally be, and I think that just helps the case for Ertz, you know, to be a solid play. I'm not saying he's going to break out. I'm not saying 20, 25 points, like, but I think he can give you like between 10 to 14, which for a fantasy tight end these days, that's pretty good. My tight end sit of the week is Jonnu Smith versus the Dallas Cowboys. Smith had the easiest matchup on paper last week against the Texans, who allowed the most fantasy points to tight ends in the league. Smith has done nothing with these prime opportunities this season. And I love Jonnu Smith. He's super athletic. He's built like a truck. I thought, you know, oh, this guy's going to be great. They gave him all this money. They're going to use him. He hasn't done anything with it. And Hunter Henry has emerged as a go-to target for Mac Jones. So I would advocate for you to put Smith not only on your bench if you roster him, but I think he can be dropped. I think Jonnu Smith is droppable at this point. And if that take ages poorly, if Jonnu Smith breaks out, great. Because I have him on so many dynasty rosters, it's not even funny. So prove me. I would love for him to prove me wrong. My defensive start of the week is the LA Rams versus the New York Giants. The Rams DST has just been middle of the pack. They're at DST 16 right now, so literally straight down the middle. But I'm expecting that to change this week against an injury-depleted Giants offense. The Giants could be without multiple starters: Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, Kenny Galladay. We went over it earlier. And this is a great matchup for the Rams, who hold this to a low-scoring affair, as well as force multiple sacks and turnovers since Mike Glennon would be the starting quarterback if Jones were to miss time. So start the Rams with confidence. I think they at least have a high floor if they don't get a lot of turnovers or sacks, which I think they will because the offensive line stinks for New York. So go ahead and fire them up with confidence. My sit of the week at defense to round this out is the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Seattle Seahawks. Now, with Wilson out of the lineup, this might seem insane. But if you watched this past Seahawks game, you would have seen Geno Smith performed more than admirably in spot work. He actually progressed the offense better than Russell Wilson did that entire game. And that's not saying, oh, Geno Smith's better than Russell Wilson. He's better for the team. No, he's not. We all know that. But he did better in a spot start than Wilson had been doing up to that point in that game. The Steelers' defense is not the steel curtain of old, and they've been giving up a slew of points outside of week one against the Buffalo Bills. The only hope here for the Steelers' defense is TJ Watt getting home on a few sacks. But outside of Watt, the Steelers are a fold fade at DST for me in what should be a higher scoring game. That's it for today's show. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at ClinicCap. And if you like the show, be sure to like and subscribe or follow the show anywhere podcasts can be found so you never miss an episode, and leave a quick review if you'd be so kind. If you want to directly ask me questions about fantasy football, sports betting, dynasty leagues, or life in general, head over to dfskarma.com and join our free chat room where you can talk to me 24/7, 365. If you want even more fantasy help and access to our proprietary tools, you can get our Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass today at dfskarma.com. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the No Cap Podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review anywhere podcasts can be found.